Joining us on Static this evening, it is most excellent to have a bloke with a new album out, Josh from Shame. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's a very different launch for an album for you guys, huh? Because your debut, Songs of Praise, came out at the start of January 2018, and a couple of weeks after that, you guys in Shame were here in Sundappled, Australia, frolicking in fountains and all sorts of things.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty surreal. We toured that album to shit, really. It was like we were straight out and we were doing Australia 2 weeks after the album came out, and then we headed to America for about 2 months afterwards. The situation's pretty different right now.
And Josh, were you all changed men by the time you got back home from touring the world after Songs of Praise?
I've always been the same. No. I don't know. I think it's a weird thing because you don't really know what to do with yourself after being on tour for such a long time. It's weird because everyone gets on with their lives doing university and stuff. For me, I didn't mind so much. I found it quite nice to actually take a break. But yeah, it was a pretty hectic schedule for us.
You must feel slightly out of place going back home, even though, because you guys in Shame had come up through a South London scene that I'm guessing had morphed and gentrified and people had moved on in the time you were away.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's a weird thing because we started and kind of built up a scene for ourselves. There weren't really many bands when we started. We made quite a few friends doing that in South London. And it's one of those things where there's a point where everyone just gets signed and starts going on tour. So that scene kind of deteriorates in a way. You come back and there's just a bunch of new people there. Like, I feel like we were on tour for 2 years and all of a sudden there were so many new bands we didn't know about and just didn't recognize anyone in South London anymore.
So you were the old guys in the pub when you went back and you knew no one to talk to?
Yeah, totally. At 23, we were the oldies now.
Well, more seriously, by the time you guys got back home, your frontman, Charlie, in particular, had developed a hard-living habit that it seems he had to break. The song, Nigel Hitter admits he was burning the candle at both ends. And were a lot of you in Shame in that kind of state of mind?
Yeah, totally. I think it affected him quite a lot as well, because that's what most of the album's about. We'd been touring solidly for 2 years and we'd had periods where it kind of, you get to a point of almost breaking. And I feel like even the first few songs on the album are about that in a way, in the sense of like you're on the road so much that you kind of feel like you have to put yourself out there and you have to keep going, and it's just a bit surreal coming back. But personally, I was kind of fine. I didn't find it to be too bad.
Well, Charlie and Sean, who live together, actually created this drunk tank, which is where the name of the album comes from, which is like a writing room painted pink, but he also used it in a way as a detox space as well.
Yeah, totally. Well, that was the thing, is he came back, like he had this room that was used to be filled with washing machines, and he gutted the whole place and painted it pink, and that was just the inspiration for the album for him.
So he took the washing machine out, so he just didn't wash any clothes ever again, but got an album out of it.
No, exactly. He didn't need to.
So it wasn't a harrowing thing to watch, though. It wasn't like Charlie was going through the detox scene in Trainspotting or anything with hallucinating babies climbing on the roof or anything.
I think he'd like to think he was, but no. It was an interesting place. It's actually sad because he just got kicked out of there. It seems like everywhere we seem to go, like all our practice spaces and stuff from when we started are all kind of getting taken over, and that was a guardianship he was staying in, and he's just been kicked out of there. So
damn,
I guess it was a very special thing just for that one album for him to have.
I guess you must feel like that a lot in a band, and it sort of helped him focus, sort of creating this space to think about what he wanted to say with the record. And after the few years of touring the first one, it's almost like his writing could be informed by the external world, but it still needs to come from the internal one.
Yeah, well, I think that's the biggest difference between the first album and the second one, because a lot of what he was saying on the first album, there was a lot of like social commentary there, or like him just talking about what he was seeing in the world. I think on the second record, he's kind of gone a lot more introspective, and it's a lot more of a personal record. I think he maybe felt that he didn't have any choice but to do that after being in a van constantly, you know.
And what's it like for you as a bandmate, Josh, to see those kind of lyrics come out of someone you're with? Is it surprising or confronting when he's presenting these new songs to you as you're making this album?
I don't know. I didn't even hear. I couldn't even really hear what you were saying when we were in the practice room. You know, I'm just listening to my bass line. You know? My role is I'm like I kind of wait until this happened both times. I wait until after he's recorded all the lyrics, and I'm like, wait, shit, like, what's this about, man? But yeah, like I found it really interesting listening to him talk about it afterwards. But I was knuckling down and just trying to make sure we were progressing musically, mainly.
I'm glad you were all focused on your jobs, Josh, because
exactly.
The road towards this album began in a barn in Scotland in mid-2019. I was very excited to see you guys did some pre-production with Kyle from Makeness.
Yeah, totally. That was great because I think we just needed, like, we were home for a few months, but I think we needed the spark to kind of get us going. So we went up to the middle of nowhere in Scotland, basically, in the mountains, and Makeness is this amazing techno producer who's on our label, Secretly Canadian. He was there to just record us, but then we set up synths, and it really helped us, I'd say, develop our sound, but I think it was just fun having someone else to bounce off of as well.
And Josh, Kyle himself is great at making rhythmic music that's not shy of some distortion. So was he happy for you guys to bring the noise too, because he does make his records in a barn on his dad's farm, right? So you can create a racket.
Yeah, he was stoked. We were stoked as well, to be honest. It was kind of a match made in heaven. It was just completely different because the first album we basically just went into a room and were like thrashing it all out, but this time we were able to, like, in Scotland and in my room or whatever, we were able to start setting up mics and kind of recording ourselves and doing a lot of production from the ground up, which is a really nice break away from what we were used to. And I think going in with Kyle and stuff helped that, you know, it was definitely, we were writing in a different sort of way.
You can hear that in this record too. The songs sound a lot more 3D, like you've sort of thought about them inside and out. And it feels also like you guys in Shame were determined not to make the same record twice.
Yeah, well, it's a weird thing because I think the mentality with writing songs for us has always been to make each song as different from the last. So I think that was actually a big concern for us going in, was that it wasn't just super different from Songs of Praise. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even sure, like, it has progressed from Songs of Praise, but the mentality was similar of usually we just want to make every song sound completely different. So naturally, one album's going to sound different to the next, you know?
And Josh, I guess you're all better players in Shame now as well and have spent more time as a band. It feels that a sense of rhythm has made these Shame songs come alive. They're impassioned, but like on Born in Luton, the drums are more percussive and the guitar playing is more scratchy. So there's a whole lot of other elements that you weren't able to bring on the first Shame album.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think our playing got better just from being a robot for 3 years and just, like, it seems like you're not, it doesn't feel like you're practicing when you're playing the same songs every night. But then you come back to the UK and you're like, holy shit, my hand's on fire. with it a lot more.
I think after you've played a certain way for a number of years as well, you want to get more unconventional and you feel safer in doing that. I know your guitarist Sean was listening to different music as well, things like ESG and Talking Heads. So you can feel all that invention, and it comes out as danceability on this record.
Totally. I guess next time we'll go as undancey as possible.
Shame's music for airports is on the way.
Exactly. Elevator music is the next part.
Well, you know, you might only be playing in elevators if things keep going this way. I do hope that you can get Shame on the road properly again at some point outside of the UK.
Yeah, me too.
We might have a listen to a song off of Drunk Tank Pink right now. We'll play Harsh Degrees, which has got those great lyrics, Josh, about I am your puppet master, you are my play toy.
Yeah, it's like Metallica.
It is. It was great to talk to you on Static this evening.
Yeah, it was good.
This is The Sound of Shame now on Static. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you, Chris. It's easy, I swear. The less you think, the less you care. And stop wasting my time.